Hail, cheaters, and welcome to another episode of the Always Cheating Fantasy Premier League podcast. My name is Brandon, and I captained Aguero in Game Week 8, and I am joined by a guy who also captained Aguero, Josh. Josh, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Brandon. How are you?
How close were you to the triple captain button? I mean, it's easy to say in hindsight you were thinking about it.
Yeah, we were talking about this earlier. Obviously, I think a lot of us are planning to hold the triple captain until week like 37 if we have that kind of self-control. Or certainly a double game week down the line. There should be plenty after the FA Cup matches. You're not going to get – even like in a double game week, the best you could possibly hope for was to get a 25-point haul, right? I mean, that is five goals.
There have to be fantasy managers out there who are even scoffing at people who played the triple captain on Aguero, like, lucky assholes. I would have held mine for the double game week.
Well, I will say it wasn't like they were picking him in the best of form.
It would be such a strange decision.
Yeah,
because we talked about this on the Always Cheating podcast about you can't drop Aguero, but he's been in such poor form that the debate is whether or not to even armband him.
But yeah, it's like you playing the all-out attack a few weeks ago. Like sometimes you just get bored.
Yeah, I needed to juice it.
And you need to feel alive for a minute.
yeah, exactly. And then this game week 8 was exactly why we were all fearfully armbanding Aguero this entire time while he was out of form.
Yeah,
because of something exactly like this. So it does prove our fears correct.
Yeah, it would have been really interesting if a couple of other players had really, Arsenal were hosting Sunderland, or even if Chelsea were hosting Sunderland, or some team was playing like Leicester, who were in good form, I could see a path towards captaining somebody else this week.
Sure, there were a lot of captaincies for Payet or Vardy, which weren't terrible in the end. I mean, you certainly dropped hundreds of thousands of spots.
Well, this is the incredible thing is it actually could have been a lot worse. I mean, you get 50 points from Aguero, and I feel like if you have Aguero, if you're investing that much money in him, you probably – I think most people will captain him this week. I wish we had the stats handy and how many people had him and captained him, but certainly the majority, I would think. And I think that it really could have been extreme if Mahrez had played and, only picked – if he'd come in like in the 89th minute and had 1 point and all the people who vice-captain Aguero wouldn't have been able to bring him in. Or if Vardy didn't get 9 points doubled or Payet got 10 doubled. It really – it's kind of insane how much worse it could have been for a lot of people. In the end, I mean, it's 25 doubled, but, it's still – it's not insurmountable,
I was texting you during the game about how 25 points somehow just didn't seem quite enough for a guy who scores 5 goals in 20 minutes.
Right. And then I was.
Yeah, you responded by saying it was like me complaining about getting a goal from Benteke when I captained him in week 2 or 3 or whenever it was. Like it was, what's the phrase?
Sour grapes.
Being ungrateful.
But, so what's your, do you know your overall rank at this point, Brennan, after what happened?
I do. Yeah. So I jumped like a million spots, like literally a million. So right now my overall rank is 456,980.
Okay, and that's respectable.
Going into the week, I was at least 1.5 million. I think it was actually closer to 1.6 million.
Yeah, as we've discussed in every previous podcast, it has not been the greatest start of the year for either of us. I actually jumped 1.2 million spots, and I got up to 721,000. Now, I know it feels a little – I mean, obviously, I had a good week. I had 97. Do you have 102?
Yeah, 102. So, I mean, anytime you break the century mark, the last time I broke the century mark was when Suarez got 4 goals against Norwich City.
Right. But compared to, a lot of the people who are listening to this podcast, 97 is a good score, but not incredible.
You're
right?
Basically maintaining status quo, or you're keeping up with the Joneses.
Right. But you still had to eventually jump over these people, I mean, it made things a lot easier, I think that a lot of us who were kind of toiling in the millions and the 2 millions, we knew just because we take the game so seriously that by week 30 or something, we would, you know, take over most of the people who weren't, you know, seriously weren't as, you know, weren't sort of adapting to the game. But now we just get to do it like 23 weeks sooner. You know, it's just more fun.
Yeah. Yeah. There has been a lot more excitement, but balance is starting to come back into the game. I mean, this week, all of the heavy hitters seem to deliver, unless you were carrying Manchester United players like Martial didn't deliver. But Sanchez, a brace to follow up a hat trick, Payet delivered, Pelé, who is gaining a lot of steam now, delivered, Mane. Vardy, Ighalo.
It was that Ighalo goal was ridiculous.
Well, we will get to that goal and all the other ridiculous goals. We're going to recap game week 8 later in the episode. So coming up, we're going to give you the lowdown on our Hail Cheaters mini league, who's come into the league, who's doing well. And then we have some questions coming in from our Twitter feed at Hail Cheaters that we're going to answer. Then we'll recap game week 8, and we're going to close this with a special analysis. Since we're going into the international break, we're going to have a little downtime. So Josh and I thought we would give the listeners a little food for thought. And we pulled together a lot of data on defenders in the FPL game.
Yeah, we figured after 8 weeks we would make some half-assed effort to bring some statistics into the podcast.
So stats abound in this episode, and we're actually going to come back next week during the break, and we'll optimize all your teams going into game week 9. So
yeah, let's talk about anybody who's injured, or we're going to try to do a rundown of who traveled the most too, which could be useful.
So it was a very special game week 8 for all of us and the Hail Cheaters Public League. Josh, do you have the table there up in front of you?
I have it here somewhere. Okay, yes, I do. So we are now at, we're 102 managers in the Hail Cheaters League.
Far out, yeah. A special welcome to new boys. David Underhill, your team, Pretty Mediocre FC, gets a special shout out because you are our 100th manager. So welcome, Dave. And then we've got Nathan Jerome with Pirlo FC and Pat Dudzinski with Paddy Pool. So welcome, guys. We'll incorporate you in the next points update.
So, Brandon, when we look at the top 10, it looks like outside of Isle of Bumbu with 89, everyone had over 100 points, well over 100 points in a couple cases. The high scorer was Brian White's Wildcard Beaches, followed closely by Mark Johnson's Stone Cold Stunners. That was a real mouthful. I don't know why that was.
Well, you got the stuh and the stuh. It's a hard one. It's a tongue twister.
It is. Yeah, exactly. I gotta do more mouth exercises before we start the podcast.
Actually, I don't know if you were a WWF fan. Is this a reference to Stone Cold Steve Austin? Was that one of his moves, the Stone Cold Stunner?
Isn't like a Stone Cold Stunner just like a beautiful person, like a Stone Cold Stunner?
Yeah, it's like you. Like you, Josh.
That's right, Brandon. So at the top is IX Treesdown, Colin Bothwell holding steady with 115 points. And what's most impressive to me is that he is actually 93rd in the world.
Well done, Colin.
Yeah. So 3.5 million people, he is 93. It really speaks to the competitiveness of the league, too, which is pretty exciting. And then Reg Monterey is in second place. Again, as he was last week. Actually, the top four are unchanged. And Hugh Patrick Campbell is in third, and Pat Vivat's Hippo FC is fourth.
Now, did Hugh Patrick Campbell steal our idea? Well, he didn't steal it, but last week we talked about Nyam 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 being one of our favored FPL team names.
I can't remember. Did he have it before? Maybe I stole it from him. That's hard to say.
Intellectual property has gone crazy in the FPL this year.
Well, the problem is, you know, you can have multiple people with the same name. So this is why there were like 30,000 people that had Why Always Me about 3 years ago.
Yeah, it's true.
The new team name that I like is Andy Lakeman's Coney Island Bebe. And that's Kone, K-O-N-E, Island Bebe, which is just great. And I love the read, so that was just fantastic.
Yeah, great shout. I'm looking right now at Get Richie or Die Trying.
That's not bad.
Yeah, that's not bad. All right, so my duty this week will be to give special notice to the people who are getting relegated this week, the lowest scores. Team Rocket down in 93rd spot with 31 points, and also just below him in 94th position, Ava Van Kulu is also had 31 points.
Yep, tough week if he didn't have Aguero.
Yeah, there's a guy in our private league who he actually put Aguero on his bench this week, which, like, I don't even know what was going through his mind. And just by the sheer luck of Mahrez not making it onto the field, Aguero...
He still started Yaya Toure. It was very weird.
Yeah, I'm not sure his brain is functioning at capacity right now.
He just got married.
He did. Yeah, so he's happy nonetheless. So you can still join the Hail Cheaters Public League. We encourage you to do so. The league code is on our Twitter page, at Hail Cheaters, or you can find it at our website, alwayscheating.com.
All right, Brandon, should we get to the game week?
Before we do the game week, because I know you've got a lot of things you want to cover there, we're going to go to Twitter, and we have some questions from our cheaters. So the first question comes from John Sharp. And he says, I'm sticking with Walcott over Sanchez for now. Is that madness? Smiley face.
You know, I don't know. I guess that's not a very insightful answer, but well, I guess it probably is, but it's hard to say before the international break is over.
If you look at the last 2 weeks, it surely is madness that Sanchez 5 goals in 2 weeks, but... Everyone says this about the Arsenal midfield. The points do get spread. And you could easily see a game week in which Walcott comes to the fore and he gets his hat trick. He is the tip of the spear.
It's, you know, the problem is it's not like it's a simple swap. You know, you're talking about, I think Walcott's 8-5 and Sanchez probably up to like 11-2 now. So you've got to find 2.7 million in your team, which is not... It's not always that. I actually think I would probably be making a move right now to bring in Sanchez. I think it would be very risky not to have Alexis Sanchez right now, given the form that he's in, assuming nothing bad happens in the national break. I mean, the problem, though, is that he had this possible hamstring injury, too. So I think that we'll know more next week. We can talk about that in the next podcast.
Yeah, Walcott could be a short-term solution. Like, say your squad needs like full-on surgery to get Sanchez in there. You don't want to be without Arsenal coverage.
Yeah.
And Walcott did have a great match.
But if you could turn, like, if you still had Hazard, if you could turn Hazard into Mane, you know, that would free up the money you'd need.
Right.
You know, if you didn't, I mean, the problem is, you know, it's unclear, I guess, without we don't have his team in handy. I think it'd be worth downgrading a striker, certainly, to get that extra money too. I mean, I think I think it's not madness, but I would be making a move to bring in Sanchez. I certainly would want him over Walcott at this point. Right. I mean, are you thinking about this? You have Ozil, so what's your feeling on this?
I do have Ozil, and my feeling is I agree with you. Sanchez is the imperative. You have to have.
Sounded so like, that sounds like an action movie.
Yeah, it's the new Bourne movie, the Sanchez Imperative, or the Alexis Imperative, if
or
we want
John
this to play
Sanchez
down in South
is
America.
The Imperative. This Christmas, Sanchez is Imperative.
I justified I got incredibly lucky with Ozil, who seems incapable of scoring goals this season, actually getting that goal, assist, and bonus points to allow me to just hang with people who have Sanchez.
Yeah, I mean, he looked great. You know, he looked great as a player, you know, as a fantasy prospect. I think it's still a little risky. I mean, he doesn't take a lot of shots on goal, so you're always going to... I mean, he's pretty consistent. I mean, I think he's been more consistent this year already than he was last year in terms of, you know, what he's delivering.
Yeah.
I mean, let's see. He has a goal and 4 assists for the first 8 games. I mean, given his price point, it's not like he's 11 million. I mean, that's a better haul than Eden Hazard can get you.
Yeah, and I suspect a lot of people are looking to game week 11 and trying to think of how they're going to get Lukaku into their squads and a few other Everton assets. And maybe money needs to be saved, but if you're building a plan around Walcott, you better be stacked everywhere else. You better have the likes of Aguero and KDB and a bunch of other bandwagons, because you're going to need help.
Yep, I think that's true. I mean, I think but it just seems like it does seem to put you at an advantage, given assuming that his hamstring is fine. Then it seems like you know it's an uphill battle for sure. Like, I'm not even sure. Would you want Walcott over Sadio Mane at this point? Or Payet, if you didn't have Payet already?
I guess Payet is the better... Payet would definitely be the better option, because it looks right now they're going to be equal on points, Walcott and Paye, and you're still going to be saving even more money getting a Paye at what he's now like 8.0 million.
Yeah. 8.1 actually.
Man. Oh, well, speaking of price rises, our next question comes from David Wegner Lodahl, and he asks, with slower price changes since last year and less price rises this year, has your approach to building team value changed? And Josh and I, I feel like we have differing opinions or at least differing strategies on team value. But this is an interesting question. I don't know that price changing or price rises are less this year. They just seem to be coming faster. Yeah. Or maybe that there have just been so many oddball bandwagons early in the season that we've seen people shoot up in price real quick and then their price gets set.
Right. I mean, I guess we're seeing that with Anthony Martial a little bit right now, right, where he jumped from 8 to... he's at 8.4 now. So I think he, did he actually drop already? No, I guess 8.4 is just as hard. I'm actually surprised he hasn't gone even higher.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because, you know, it's capped at three, you know, 3/10 is the highest you can go.
Yeah.
And maybe that money doesn't spill over the next way. Like, so like if 2 million people add you, it's not like it's 8.3 and then it just keeps ticking over from there. It just stops there and then it kind of starts over the next week.
Yeah, I'll be curious to see what happens to his value over the international break, because
he looked dangerous in that Arsenal game.
He did. He had that one shot that Cech had a miraculous save. So yeah. Had he scored that, I think he'd be guaranteed to be coming into a lot of teams over the break. You know, definitely whoever is playing their wild card.
To answer the question though, it hasn't changed my philosophy too much. Mostly because I am extremely cautious when it comes to making transfers. I tend to wait until the last possible. I mean, it's basically like before, you know, as an American, obviously we don't have the morning to keep tinkering. So it's, you know,
I've set a lot of drunk squads Friday night.
Yeah. Usually minutes before I fall asleep is when I usually make my transfer. Yeah. And even then I will sometimes wake up in the middle of the night and like start tinkering with my team again.
Yeah.
Cause I'm a crazy person, but I think, I don't know. It doesn't really,
they don't call you the tinker man for nothing.
Yeah. I don't feel like it's changed too much so far. Do you feel like the prices have changed?
No, not.
In a way that feels radically different. I mean, I guess,
No.
I'm sure if we had the stats, I'm sure he's right, but it doesn't feel that way to me.
No, and I finally got early in the season, I was operating with a pretty healthy bank, like usually around $1 million in the bank. And I'm now at capacity. Like, it's taken me to game week 8 to be operating. I think right now I have 0.1 in the bank. So then it becomes more touch and go watching the price rises, because if you're looking at that bandwagon and you know the value is going to go up, your team could be totally upset if you don't jump on like that Monday or Tuesday or even the weekend.
Yeah.
I take a different view than you, and that I'm at least early in the season where the values are a little more volatile.
Yeah.
Like,
I just think, I don't know. It's very rare that a transfer comes back to bite you. I mean, really what ends up happening is I make a decision. What often happens is I make a decision in my head on Saturday or Sunday, and then I spend the next several days trying to justify that decision in the face of all the other evidence that I'm seeing after that. Like, I can get a little too locked in sometimes.
This sounds like my dad shopping for a computer. Like, he'll go down to Office Max and he'll just, you know, look at all the laptops, talk to the sales clerk, be like, I'm not quite ready yet. And then he goes back next week. Is anything on sale right now? That sort of thing. That's what you're like.
Yeah, that is kind of what I'm like. So it looks like you're more aware of it. I am not. It hasn't changed my philosophy very much.
Yeah, and it does get dicey during the international break, because injuries and fatigue, team rotation become even more of an issue, and you're more liable to get burned on an early transfer.
I also just don't think I have the brain space for it. I mean, I just may not be smart enough to really play the price rise game to its fullest capacity. I mean, I think that you really have to be aware of building value all across your team to really take advantage. I mean, I'm cognizant of my players rising and falling in value.
There's no temptation to get on the front page of the FPL game for most valuable teams.
I feel like when you look at those teams by the end of the year, that the most valuable team is never the team. It's like it's always someone that's always like 480,000.
Let's see. The most valuable team right now is 105.9 million, bringing Sexy back. I'm pulling the team up right now, and he's currently ranked overall rank in 1.3 million in the world. So
yeah, it makes no difference. I mean, the most valuable team. In general, I think obviously it makes sense to hop on early, and it buys you a lot of money that you can spend elsewhere.
All right. So everybody listening out there, feel free to reach out to us at our Twitter at Hail Cheaters. We're always on tweeting, answering your questions or asking you questions when we have no idea what the hell to do with our team. So listen, it's a give and take.
All right. Shall we get to the game week?
Yeah. Game week 8. It was a wild one. All right, so the first, the early kickoff for us at 7:45 in the morning. Did you bother getting up for this match, Josh? Crystal Palace, West Brom.
I did in the end, and I'm glad I did. It was actually a pretty fun match. Did you watch it?
I did watch it. I had Craig Dawson in my back line. I didn't really have any great hope that he'd get a clean sheet, but Crystal Palace looked really good.
Zaha, I feel like you were just yawning as you thought about that game.
I was. Actually, I felt like I had a little burp coming. I had to repress it. I'm drinking seltzer water, so I apologize if you can hear any bubbles through my microphone.
I thought it was a really fun match. I was just, as a soccer match, I enjoyed it quite a lot. I thought that Crystal Palace looked fantastic. Zaha is such an interesting player. I mean, he is, you know, I mean, he's so fast. I mean, this is the second week in a row where he's just murdered somebody, you know?
He made
Chris Brunt look so bad. I mean, because, you know, Nyam on Watford, who we also destroyed last weekend, he's one of the top defenders in the Premier League this year. And, you know, Brunt is obviously a converted winger, and he made him look awful.
Yeah. I mean, Zaha is one of those players I kind of hate because he's like the king of the step over that's going nowhere.
His speed is
yeah, he what he excels at difference. Yeah, he excels at getting into the penalty box, and I mean, think as you put out on the Hail Cheaters Twitter feed that he's the player that he looks dangerous, but he has zero finishing ability.
Yeah, it's true, but you know, I don't know.
I think another reason why I hate him is he has resting bitch face.
He looks really intense, his eyes got huge a few times in that match, like so intense, and he's got like this really like I don't know, yeah, he's got no fat at all on his face, so it's like I feel like every expression is just like right there in front of you. Yeah.
So big takeaways here, fantasy wise, I think is Kabai is the real deal, and as far as a midfield differential.
Oh, I mean, huge value at 6.5. I was actually at 6.4 over the weekend. Just rose. Yeah, 3 goals, 1 assist. So he's on penalties, and with Zaha, you know, terrorizing defenders, there's a very good chance that he'll be on. You know, that he'll have more penalties to take this year. I'm really impressed with the way the whole team, just the way they seem to work together. It's really, you got to give credit to Alan Pardew.
Yeah,
not a lot of people want to do this, but you got to give him credit.
Yeah. Another concern, though, is a guy who we were all big upping, Sacco, who didn't even play this weekend.
I was surprised about that. I don't know. I don't know if it was a fit issue or, you know, diminishing returns. I mean, he hasn't had he didn't have a goal or an assist in the 3 games leading up to this one. So maybe it was just a tactical move, just resting him. I don't think he's injured.
Could it have anything to do with him having one of the stranger hairlines in the Premier League?
I think it has everything to do with that.
All right, so
it's like a part that like starts above his ear. It's very smooth. It's like a comb over almost. Yeah, with a shaved head comb over.
So a great win there for Crystal Palace and Johan Kaboy.
Kaboy. And 2 straight clean sheets for the Crystal Palace defense.
All right, so the next match in the fixture list, Aston Villa Stoke. I don't know what we could possibly say about this other than Arnautovic continues to haunt us with his great but strange performances
and his terrible top knot. Oh, I broke my clean streak duck in this game.
Yeah, congratulations. Hashtag save Josh. Hashtag clean sheet.
It was getting this game was just, it was like heading towards a 0-0 the whole time. And I thought that's incredible.
You're going to get 2 clean sheets because you had Micah Richards in your back line.
Right? I'm getting emotional over here just thinking about it. I'm going to get 2 clean sheets. I'm going to break my duck wide open.
that sounds like some real body horror.
That sounds like something you do like around like Thanksgiving, right? Yeah. during harvest season. Yeah, so, you know, whatever. I'll take the Jack Butland clean sheet. He's kind of been my star defender anyway. Let's just move on from that game. It's kind of a boring one.
Yeah, so Bournemouth-Watford 1-1, really interesting game in many ways. We saw the return of the Artur Burić dynamic step-over move.
Shades of Burić and Giroud 2 years ago, I think. And I remember I actually had Giroud in my fantasy league that year when that happened. It was a glorious
goal. Oh, yeah, it was a huge gift. So Glenn Murray gets his goal, but he also misses the penalty. Mm-hmm. And then Aurelio Gomez, still like what a great goalkeeping asset in the FPL right now.
Were you a little surprised that he took that penalty? I would have thought it would have been Matt Ritchie.
I mean,
that I know enough about Bournemouth.
Yeah, I'm gonna plead ignorance on this one. I was not surprised. I mean,
Glenn Murray, like, you know, been on the team for 4 weeks versus Matt Ritchie, who led the team in, was it goals and assists last year? It was definitely assists.
You'd have to guess that Murray was just crushing it on penalties in training, right?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
So,
but he missed a bad penalty last year near the end of the season, the game against Liverpool. So I don't know. Yeah, well, I mean, I guess it's just a one-time thing, but
we'll see. I mean, all will be revealed when Bournemouth gets its next penalty. Will it be Murray or will it be Ritchie? Because Murray will certainly be getting the game time with Callum Wilson out.
Right. Right. So yeah, interesting match on both sides. Yeah, so Deeney is finally gone. It's ludicrous.
But he's officially gone from your squad?
Well, I mean, I haven't made my move yet for a week now, but he is gone, believe me. By hook or by crook, Troy Deeney will be off my team by next week.
How do you get him out? Because he's worth like $5.3 million
right now? This was the problem. I mean, you know, it's been the fact that I even have him is just insane. I mean, it's not like it's been an utter – I mean, I've got 3 assists from him, so it's not like a – complete disaster, but no bonus points or anything. It's clearly a big reason why my season hasn't gone very well. I mean, it's just based on his performing. He scored 20 goals 3 years in a row. Obviously, that was in the championship. He's on penalties. You would have thought at some point in the first 8 weeks there would have been a penalty. And then he got slotted behind Agallo. And once that happened, everything just became him setting him up, basically.
Just imagine if Deeney was getting all of the Agallo goals. You'd be so happy right now.
It'd be a huge difference. Yeah, it really would be a huge difference. So the problem was I actually couldn't really move him out last week. I mean, there were no good moves outside of, you know, possibly bringing in Norwich's striker, Cameron Jerome, which I wasn't excited to do.
Who would be?
So I basically had to not make a transfer this week so that I could have 2 transfers next week in order to bring in Deeney. Cause there weren't any other moves I really wanted to make this week. And, you know, it wasn't like there was, I don't know. All my midfielders had games that I wanted them to play in. So it wasn't like I could, like this week, what I'm really seriously considering is just getting rid of Hazard, even though they're home to Aston Villa, just to free up enough money to turn Deeney into Pele or possibly, Lukaku. I haven't really decided what I'm going to do about that yet.
This would be a good point for me to chime in and tell you that I did not make a transfer per our sort of dare in the last episode of the podcast. Mm-hmm. I did not make a transfer to get rid of my Swansea assets, much to my delight when Andre Ayew scored his goal against Spurs. I'm feeling good with 2 transfers going into the break, too.
Yeah, and then John Sharp, remember on Twitter, he was the one who actually took the 12-point hit. He said that he got 27 points from the 4 players he brought in for minus 12 versus the 9 he would have had from the 4 that he got rid of.
Well played, sir.
Yeah, well played. I was impressed.
Speaking of well played, this segue into the Man City-Newcastle game, 6-1, Sergio Aguero basically flipping the entire FPL table.
It was incredible. Even my wife was impressed. Like, she was like, what is going on? Like, she's like, do they have a goalkeeper? What's happening? It was incredible. I mean, the first half.
They do have a goalkeeper. One of the coolest, cool goalkeepers in the league, Tim Krul. He doesn't deserve this.
Cool guy, Krul. Newcastle looked pretty good for the first 45 minutes, and I lost another. I mean, this Kolarov thing is just an endless disaster.
You broke Kolarov for everybody.
As soon as you brought him in. I broke the game. And so, yeah, 0-0 and 2 are my. I've had 2 points total from 3 games. It's not even averaging 1 point yet.
Yeah, I'm getting no value from Joe Hart right now.
So.
This is just like what Man City did last year. They could not keep a clean sheet for like 20 weeks in a row last year.
But they still have such a great run of games coming up. The clean sheets will come.
Yeah, I guess. Well, they'll come once I sell Kolarov.
Be positive.
Yeah. So anyway, the second half. I know. Yeah, come on, Josh. So the second half. Yeah, it was incredible. And so, what do you think about? You know, are you a little concerned right now about your Man City coverage?
I am concerned about De Bruyne.
Yeah, me too.
I feel like he is essential. He and Sanchez feel a little neck and neck. Like if I had to choose, I would take Alexis every day of the week.
Yeah.
But just the way the offense is clicking with Man City, KDB is on the short list of guys I've got to get in within the next week or two.
Yeah, it's pretty scary. In the end, it may have worked out okay for me because now if I bring out what I was really seriously considering up until because I didn't make a transfer this week up until the right before the game started, basically, was bringing out Hazard and bringing in David Silva, who I thought was the better choice and who did have two.
Yeah, I wouldn't have argued with you about that.
So it was 8 for Silva versus 5 for Hazard, which isn't, that substantial. But yeah, De Bruyne, it looked incredible. 15 points, scored a great goal.
He totally shinned that. He was trying, I posit that he was trying to get power out of that, and he mishit it.
Well, it looked awesome, regardless.
In real time, it looked awesome. So slow motion.
The last 3 weeks, he has 10, 7, and 15. So, I mean, he's averaging a little over 10 points right now. So he looks, I mean, so he's 10.3. I mean, this is the thing is he's not cheap. So, yeah. I mean, you're going to have to sell a very good player to bring him in.
Yeah.
Or possibly make two moves.
Or a garbage player like Hazard.
Or a garbage player like Hazard. I know. Oh God. I don't know what is going on with Chelsea.
So I feel like one of two options would have helped us in this game. Either Aguero would have gotten injured and given us license to just drop him from our squads, or he would have scored 5 or 6 goals. So
yeah, so we got the,
I feel like we got the better deal.
The question is, I think the game is more fun when you really are debating the captain choice. I mean, this is like, it's such like sour grapes, or whatever it is, like not being happy with what you have. Like obviously it was awesome that he scored 5 goals. It would not be a tragedy to me if he got injured in the international break.
No.
You know, I mean, I love him. He's a great player to watch, super fun to watch. But from a fantasy perspective, it's more fun when every week you're like agonizing over the captain choice. Yeah. Or, you know, putting the armband on somebody automatically. It's just not as, there's less creativity in the game. I mean, at this point, like, when's the next time you wouldn't put the armband on him? Like, maybe in the Manchester Derby in 2 weeks?
Maybe.
I mean, because that the same week as the Manchester Derby, Arsenal is at home to Everton. So would you possibly captain Alexis Sanchez in that game?
No.
See, but I think you have to, I would definitely think about it in that case. Partially because I'm trying to
look at how Everton's performing and look at how you based on the United result over the weekend.
Yeah, but Everton aren't keeping clean sheets. And that game is in Old Trafford, I think, right?
It is.
Yeah, so
the fortress that is Old Trafford.
the once fortress.
We jest. Yes. We have to move on with Game Week 8 before we go into the 5-hour mark.
All right.
Norwich 1, Leicester 2. This game was incredibly peculiar because our favorite guy, Riyad Mahrez, didn't make it onto the pitch.
Yeah, very interesting.
What up with that?
No, nothing, I think. I think it was just a tactical decision. And I don't know if it was I don't know. Whatever. Whatever he was thinking. I have you read any quotes? I haven't really read anything about why Mahrez didn't start. I mean, I don't think it was anything more than a tactical choice that he made. I mean, it makes me wonder if he thought that Alex Neil was going to be game planning for Mahrez and that taking him out would change the. I mean, obviously it worked.
Sure.
Right.
Sure. Absolutely. And Ranieri, the Tinker Man, that's by reputation. I would feel better about this.
In fifth place right now. I mean, it's really impressive.
It is impressive. It's great. I would feel better about this rotation, though, if it wasn't Mark Albrighton that was always coming in off my bench.
Yeah, you've got to get rid of that guy, right?
He is. I mean, and he's at 5 million.
It's impossible to get rid of a 5 million midfielder. Yeah. It's like there's a good chance you're going to have him. Like in January.
I mean, the major problem there is that, as we discussed in the last episode, that he is preventing me from bringing in Jamie Vardy, who continues his hot streak.
I know. It was a crazy week for bandwagons. They all worked.
I don't know.
Except for Martial, I guess, which that bang was really more 2 weeks ago.
I would be I don't know. I really like Vardy, as everyone does, and he's looked really impressive, but I do wonder if there's going to be a drop-off pretty soon for him.
I mean, it was a penalty goal, yeah, and it was a bit of a soft penalty at that, so yeah, it wasn't like he was bossing. You know, to be honest, I didn't watch the game, so I don't know how dominant he looked.
I would tell you that. I also
I guess we're not, like, pretending that we watch, you know, every single game, every minute of it.
No. Speaking of not watching every single minute, Sunderland 2, West Ham 2, this Payet goal, give me a break, Pantilimon. You call yourself a professional goalkeeper?
That was
totally screwed me.
I was watching that in picture-in-picture, and so
you pipped it?
So I saw there was a pretty good shot on goal, and I can't remember who shot it, but it bounced so fortuitously, and just pie like, that's when you know you're in form. The ball just, I mean, it was the easiest goal he'll score all year.
He just sort of appeared there, like he was transported there.
He should have had more points, really. I mean, he looked incredible, though. I mean, once West Ham were up a man, it was, I'm actually surprised they didn't pull that one out, because was totally bossing it. I mean, very similar to Eden Hazard last year, right? Where just if he gets attacking points, he's getting all three bonus points, because he's just doing so much in terms of, you know, completing passes and, you know, goal attempts, successful passes, chances created, etc. Just, you know, filling up the box. I mean, I would say that Payet is really one of the more, I mean, he's like getting close to essential. I mean, you know, I guess once he creeps up to that like nine million barrier, it gets a little trickier. But at 8 million, I mean, this guy is absolutely delivering every week.
He is. He has a very round head to boot.
He does. Yeah. He's not very tall, right? 5'9", maybe?
This is also a great game for us because the great American hero DeAndre Yedlin came into the starting lineup for Sunderland.
And that's right.
He was on the Sunderland Instagram feed. There's a great picture of him with these two, like, Sunderland fans that look like they came right out of a coal mine or something. It's just like some really sort of dingy looking, like, town. Sunderland, basically, in the background. Yedlin had this expression on his face of like, I'm not sure where I am or what I'm doing here. This is all very strange to me. So I'm thinking of you, DeAndre, and I'm hoping you're doing well.
All of America's pulling for you, DeAndre. So, okay, what I will say about Sunderland is the team is not that radically different than the team that was quite a strong defensive team in the second half of last season. So I wonder if, I mean, there's that miracle game again, the famous miracle game against Arsenal, right? Where it was like a, you know, 10 point haul for Pantilimon, basically changed the way that bonus points are scored.
Forever.
Forever. But I think, you know, he had he was the best player in the game, and he had like 11 saves and he didn't get any bonus points. So I think, you know, it'll just be interesting to see, or maybe he got one bonus, but I can't remember. But it'll just be interesting to see what happens with the new manager. I mean, especially if it's Nigel Clough.
Yeah.
Or not Nigel Clough. Is that?
Sam Allardyce?
No, the former Leicester manager.
Oh, Nigel Pearson.
Nigel Pearson, exactly. Who's, yeah, Nigel Clough? I think I combined.
You conflated every English manager of all time into one name, Nigel Clough.
Nigel Clough. That is the like perfect fake manager name for an English team.
All right, Chelsea 1, Southampton 3. This is the point at which.
Brent, just to go back briefly.
Sure.
So it'll be interesting to monitor Sunderland assets when they bring in Nigel Clough.
Yes.
And just to see if they become valuable at the beginning, because a lot of them, they're like, the price is very low on a lot of these assets now. So it might be a bandwagon you want to jump on quickly if it looks like they're turning around. But I mean, obviously you couldn't do that for the next couple of weeks, because that team is a disaster.
Have you been reading Harry Potter recently? I'm wondering if Nigel Clough is like a member of Ravenclaw or something like that.
I don't know. It does sound like I think he's Hufflepuff.
Hufflepuff. I'm sure that's a thing. Okay, so Chelsea 1, Southampton 3. This was the game at which I think my wife threatened to move out of the house because I went absolutely bananas when Pelle scored that goal. He's left it less a differential now, but I feel like he's the one attacking differential in my team that has actually worked this season.
Sure. Yeah, totally. Very underrated.
His holdup play is positively brilliant.
It's interesting how similar Pelé and Giroux are, you know, because Giroux will often hold the ball up and then lay it off to Ozil, Cazorla, you know, Alexis Sanchez. And you see Pelé do that right now with Mane and Tadic. And I mean, just the way they're all linking up together, it's really beautiful.
Yeah, I was terrified when Mane laid that ball off for Pelé to score that third goal, because Pelé's finishing is questionable at times. Mm-hmm. And when he scored it, I just couldn't believe it. So Chelsea continue to look like total dog shit. And Hazard has got to go from both of our teams. There's no way we can justify his more than 11
mediocre million. Results yeah. at that price.
Yeah. So he's got to go.
Yeah, I mean, Pelé is 5.1 million with 5 goals and 5 assists. Or did I say 5.1 million? 8.1 million with 5 goals and 5 assists. Has only gone up a tenth and actually dropped to 7.9 for a couple of weeks. And, I mean, it's incredible. I mean, he is very consistent, too. I mean, only 3 out of the first 8 weeks has he not delivered something.
Yeah, he's such a great package. He's delivering that, like, Peter Crouch ability to just lob the ball up to him and he'll knock it down. I mean, yeah. Like guys like Andy Carroll and Crouchy and Fellaini.
He's on 3 yellow cards, so that is there's a slight concern there. It's just, you know, something to keep an eye on. I feel like he had a yellow card problem last year, too. So, yeah, he had 6 last year. So, you know, not a huge problem, but something to keep an eye out for.
Yeah. So Southampton on the ascendancy. Then we have the Merseyside Derby, Everton 1, Liverpool 1. This was perhaps Nathaniel Klein's last game in my squad.
It's been real.
It's been a real three-game ride, Nathaniel, but we must part ways. Brendan Rodgers is gone, though, so I don't know what to think.
Yeah, it looks like Klopp is coming in. I love Klopp. I am very excited about this. I'd say that Liverpool are kind of my second. I mean, I like Arsenal and Liverpool. It's like I'm like the most cliched new American fan. But I mean, Klopp and Liverpool, it is such a perfect match, those two teams.
It is. You know, two great personalities, the great fan culture, and then just amazing.
Dortmund and Liverpool are kind of similar in terms of their you know, the way they get the kind of the amount of money they have. I mean, they're not quite at the upper end of things, but they're close. I mean, you could win the league at Liverpool. I think that, I mean, the money is there to do it, but you can't just throw money at the problem. You're going to have to be pretty clever.
So Liverpool is still very uncertain here, but in terms of Everton, they continue to look really good, especially Lukaku. Yeah. Is it too early to start putting our game week 11 plans in motion?
I don't think so. I mean, I think that Lukaku is a very. I mean, the question is, do you want Lukaku or do you want Pelé right now? Because Lukaku is actually a little more expensive, and I like the fixtures the next few weeks for Pelé a little more than Lukaku. Mm-hmm. Let's see here. Southampton is so in the next 4 weeks, Southampton are home to Leicester, then they're away to Liverpool, and they're home to Bournemouth, away to Sunderland, home to Stoke. I mean, 4 of those 5 fixtures are excellent. Like, they're excellent for defenders, they're excellent for attackers. Definitely worth making some Southampton investments. So I still feel like I would maybe start with Pelé and then move over to Lukaku.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that'd be such an easy move. I mean, you're talking about, you know, 2/10.
It would be. You'd be making money.
Well, you'd lose a little. I mean, you'd need to keep 2/10, I guess, in your bank. But that's usually a pretty easy move.
All right, so we're looking ahead to Everton. Then we have Arsenal 3, Manchester United 0. Sorry to all you managers out there holding United assets. Martial didn't do anything. Darmian got a yellow card and was subbed out at halftime.
Yeah, we talked about Alexis already. He looked incredible, as did Ozil.
Yeah, Ozil, as we all know, I persist with Ozil. If I could turn him into Alexis, I would. But this game was really encouraging. Though there was one scene in this game that was a great illustration of the two sides of the coin, the Ozil and Alexis, where Ozil demanded to take that free kick just outside the 18, but Sanchez really wanted it, and you could see him gesticulate to Ozil, like, you get one, I get one. You get one, I get one. And
yeah.
And then he decided to walk away, and Ozil just slammed the shot right into the wall. So it is a little terrifying because you could see Alexis is out there to score goals and to win the game for the team. And Ozil, for how good he looked, he still just looks tentative in front of goal.
That's a very good illustration of the difference between those two players. I mean, Alexis is just so relentless.
This is
really, I guess, what it comes down to, you know, in terms of the Alexis versus everybody else on Arsenal question, you know, specifically Alexis and Theo Walcott. I mean, I just think that kind of relentless, pursuit of goals is – Walcott has had that in previous years, but Alexis has really taken that role on. So I don't think you're going to get the huge explosive returns for Theo Walcott as long as Alexis Sanchez is playing in the field.
At least not as regular.
And certainly in the form he's in.
Yeah. All right, Swansea 2, Spurs 2, Andre Ayew.
Yeah, Ayew looked good. I don't know if you saw, I posted this on the Twitter feed. Basically, Christian Eriksen had two free kicks, and he is so good at that specific thing.
That first one, though, what was Fabianski doing?
I don't know, but Gylfi Sigurdsson's like this, too. Every now and then you'll see Gylfi line up for a free kick, and it just, the odds are, 99 out of 100 he's going to score.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, and same thing with Eriksen. He's so solid on free kicks that it was just like, well, these are both goals. And I actually predicted them to my wife both times. I said, he's going to score on this one. And then it happened 45 minutes later. I said, he's going to score on this one too. I guarantee it. In both cases, I mean, it wasn't even close, really. I mean, I don't think Fabianski was within 2 feet of him on either goal.
I'm in no way enticed to bring him into my squad, though.
Yeah, I'm not really either, but I feel like it's... Yeah, I'm not really either. It's kind of tempting. I mean, he has two goals and two assists in the last three games. He's 8.3. Who would you want instead of him? You know, I mean, I'd rather have a Man City midfielder. I'd rather have Payet. I'd rather have Mane. The fixtures do actually look pretty good for Spurs, especially after the Liverpool match is over. Bournemouth, Aston Villa. Well, the 3 out of 4. Bournemouth, Aston Villa, and then it gets a little trickier. Arsenal, West Ham, Chelsea.
Yeah. So for everyone fretting out there about Tim Gomes,
Poor Tim.
He's going to survive at least one more game week, right? Because they're home to Stoke next week.
Yeah, but it did not look good for Gomes. I don't know if they're game planning more for him or if he just isn't... his confidence.
He's not that good.
I don't know.
He's not that good.
He's pretty good. I don't know. I like his movement. I like his strength. But yeah, just his runs. He wasn't. I don't know. Just it was not working for him this game.
So we're gonna preview game week 9 when we come back next week during the break. But that is basically our highly impactful analysis of game week 8. It's gonna carry you through. But right now we want to hit you with a boatload of stats. Because the people asked for it.
They did.
So, Josh, you spent the whole day basically putting together this incredible spreadsheet.
I went to – I used all of my I took full advantage of my Fantasy Football Scout membership and pulled a bunch of
– I have to tell you, Josh, my Fantasy Football Scout membership this season is much like a gym membership. I purchased it with the best of intentions, and I think I've used their tables once or twice.
They have a real problem with their Rate My Team system right now. It is not adapting to 2015, 2016 data well enough. And I mean, I absolutely love that site, but the point is I pulled some good data from the website.
Yeah.
And so I think the question that we have basically are, you know, who are the reliable defenders through 8 weeks and who are defenders that are maybe a little under the radar that you might want to keep an eye on?
I feel like there are a lot of managers out there like me right now who one of our big weak points is our defense. And I mean, as you know, Josh, you had no clean sheet until game week 8. So this is one major part of our team that could use a lot of work.
I think so. One thing that stood out to me just initially is I think, you know, when Arsenal is bad, they're so bad that it when they have a game like they do in week 1 against West Ham, I think it really biases you against Arsenal defenders. And, you know, looking at the data, I mean, two of the top defenders so far are Hector Bellerin and Nacho Monreal. And, you know, Monreal in particular is, you know, going to be starting every week, probably. I mean, unless Gibbs can break through. But it looks like Gibbs is basically on, you know, Capital One cap duties right now.
Yeah, and Bellerin was the man. I believe in real life, Bellerin is still the man and way better than Monreal. But this season, it's all Monreal. He has 2 assists. He's on 5 bonus points total. The same with Bellerin.
Yeah, I mean, the successful pass number for Monreal is incredible. He has 362 successful passes so far, 173 touches in the final third, which ranks him in the top 10 defenders.
Mm-hmm.
Right up there in recoveries too, in the top 5 in recoveries. So just a lot of, he's doing it, you know, basically there are 2 different ways that you can gain points as a defender, right? You can either, be, you know, creating chances, completing a lot of passes, you know, or obviously getting goals or assists, or you can, you know, have a lot of, you know, clearances, recoveries, win tackles, and it's very rare to find players who are doing both.
Yeah.
And there are a few players that do seem to stick out. And, you know, one of them is Kolarov, which is kind of an obvious thing. So there's no point in dwelling on it too much. I mean, basically, if you're, you know, Kolarov is, you know, as long as Gale Clichy is out, Kolarov is the most valuable defender in the league because there's some goal threat. There's some assist threat. He leads all defenders in bonus points. Despite what's happened the last couple weeks for Man City, he looks, you know, I mean, he's all around the outside of the box.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm surprised he didn't get any points this past game week.
Yeah, I was too. He had a couple chances too. I mean, he laid one out for Wilfred Bony that he almost scored on. Leads all defenders in successful passes. Is right up there with touches in the final third as well. He actually leads all defenders in that too. The player that also sticks out up there with Kolarov is Trevor Francis. And the only problem
from
there,
Bournemouth.
From Bournemouth, 4.5 million defender. I think the only issue there is I wonder if we've kind of missed the boat with him a little bit, not because his price is so high, but just because
he's Bournemouth's a 4.5.
Fixtures. Well, yeah, it's not about the price, it's about the fixtures. It's kind of a tough run ahead for them. Away to Man City, home to Spurs, away to Southampton, home to Newcastle, which could be a clean sheet, but then, you know, away to Swansea, home to Everton, away to Chelsea, home to Man United. So over the next, you know, 7 weeks, I'm not really sure you'd want to start at Bournemouth except for one of those 7 games.
No. I'm a little sad about this because Francis was in my squad to start the season and I lost him when I played my wild card and I tried to upgrade.
But he's right up there, and I think he's second in successful passes, second in touches in the final third, 2 assists. I mean, it might be worth. I mean, if you haven't wild carded yet, I think you'd be worth bringing in because there is enough attacking threat there that for a 4.5 million midfielder, I mean, you cannot get more value from a 4.5 midfielder than you're getting from Francis.
This is a weird one, though. Looking at touches in the final third, coming in third with 187, Amavi for Aston Villa.
Yeah,
It is kind of wild. I mean, and I can't even fathom a world in which I'd bring in a Villa defender, particularly one that costs 5.0.
But, you know, I mean, the thing is 5.0 is not, I mean, you know, it's not that much higher than 4.5, right? I mean, 4.5 seems incredibly cheap to us,
right?
And 5 million seems incredibly expensive, but in
that's
the
like
end
a luxury player right there.
Yeah, exactly. But it's not really, right? I mean, that's always like the problem with like the Stoke, like famously the Stoke midfielders used to always be classified as 5.0.
You know, defenders. And then
would I say midfielders? Yeah, defenders, of course. And so it was always hard to like justify bringing in Shawcross because, like, well, I'm not like getting enough from them. You know, they're not a guaranteed clean sheet any given week.
Yeah, it does go back to the discussion we had in many, many episodes ago about not getting too bothered by a guarantee of a clean sheet from your defender. And looking at this data, it really helps you make those decisions of where else you can get points from your defenders. And this season,
because you're seeing it with Amavi. I mean, you're seeing he already has 4 bonus points this year, which I didn't realize. 2 assists
off of 1 clean sheet.
Yeah, off of 1 clean sheet but 2 assists. It's created 7 chances, which puts him somewhere like in the top 10 or so, I'd say, for defenders. Third in touches in the final third, is also right up there in defensive stats though too. I think he might actually be, let me see if I can pull it up here. He's second in the league in recoveries, and right up there at the top in tackles won too. So he's doing it on both ends.
That's provocative.
getting it done.
Now, what about Manchester United? Because we have a few options there, like Darmian and Smalling. You've got some stats here about yellow cards, though.
Well, the problem with Darmian is that he's on four yellow cards. I mean, obviously, a lot of people would have a hard time bringing him in anyways. He's got a negative one at Arsenal. I do think he'll be consistently starting for Man U despite going off at halftime.
Yeah, presumably he'll earn out over the course of the season.
Right, but you know he's at 5.8. I think we're still not totally sure what we're going to get from Man United. Without Luke Shaw, that Arsenal game was kind of an outlier, right? Because they actually looked much better in the second half, and there was just they blitzed him in the first half.
It's true,
but I think that. If you were willing, if you have the money, Chris Smalling would be the way to go. If you had the extra 0.5 million, because he's getting more bonus points. He's really getting it down at the defensive end. He's right up there in clearances, successful passes, recoveries. You know, all the things that factor into getting bonus points. So if Manu keeps a clean sheet, Chris Smalling's going to be at the top of the bonus point list.
Jeffrey Schlupp from Leicester City. You weren't even aware that this guy was a defender for how often he gets forward for Leicester.
Yeah. Is he out of position, or does it just seem like he is? I feel like he's all over the field.
I haven't studied their lineup enough, but I do feel like he plays up on the wing more in a midfield role. But yeah, he's always on the ball in the final third.
So maybe he's one to keep an eye out for, too. Although, I mean, do you... Just could you?
I already have too many Leicester people in play.
Could you justify bringing a Leicester defender? So there are a couple. So we talked about Francis already in Bournemouth. There are a couple other 4.5 million midfielders that I have seen talked about on the forum, but just to on various forums, but yeah, just to highlight them again.
If we could pinpoint some of the potential options to bring in at 4.5,
yeah. So I think
I'm asking for a friend. Okay,
Suarez on Crystal Palace is one who, he passes the stat test and the eye test. Already has an assist on the year, top 10 in chances created, completing a lot of passes, and it's just all. I mean, it's sort of like Schlupp. He's just all over the attack.
Yeah,
seems very central to the attack.
His stats are a little skewed because Joel Ward, who is comparable at Crystal Palace, also priced at 4.5, has been out injured, and he was dynamite to start the season.
Yeah, and do you still have Ward?
I did drop Joel Ward. I think he was part of the surgery in which I brought in Craig Dawson and Nathaniel Klein,
okay,
which only marginally worked out for me.
I think I would go with, based on what we've seen from the stats here, I actually think that Suarez is the better choice in the long run. This Crystal Palace assets really might be worth looking at. I mean, I know that it's there's a little bit of points chasing because obviously they've had a clean sheet 2 weeks in a row, and I think they're the fixtures were pretty good. Playing Watford and West Brom, and a West Brom team that looks really out of form right now.
I don't see these Crystal Palace defenders jumping up in value anytime soon, though. So they're just, if you're not ready yet to take the plunge,
yeah,
maybe
that'd be worth
hold off.
Yeah, so I think. The other one, Francis Suarez and Yam, and Yam is the Watford defender, is another one to keep an eye out for. Already has four bonus points on the year, has three clean sheets, six attempts on goal.
Mm-hmm.
He's getting forward a lot. I mean, it's hard to look past Wilfred Zaha destroying him a couple of weeks ago.
Sure,
but he looks like a very very solid player in the stats.
I mean, doesn't every defender have like a bugaboo player that they just can't play against?
Yeah, you see Nyam in the back end too. I mean, he's in the top 10 in recoveries and the top 10 in tackles won, and those are huge factors in accruing bonus points. So he's definitely one to keep an eye out for.
Yeah. So you see a huge amount of these bonus points going to fullbacks, wingers. Then there are some central defenders, much like Ashley Williams, who's favored on Swansea. But I don't know about him. Like he has almost he has so little attacking potential.
But that's true. Although he's really a fun player. Like it'd be fun just to have him on your team. Just so you can
he's
such an awesome
hands
player.
Hands down, the coolest looking guy in the whole league.
But he's also just awesome. Like he just destroyed Wayne Rooney a few weeks ago.
Yes.
And
yes,
anybody,
that tackle was epic. a tackle of epic proportion.
It truly was. But I mean, he's definitely there in terms of right up there on top of successful passes, up there with headed clearances, up there and. Straight clearances. So definitely, yeah, but, not as much attacking threat. Definitely gets it down on the defensive end, and is only $5 million. So the price is not too bad.
But we could compare him to Kyle Naughton, who, let's see, you've got him on the sheet somewhere, who his counterpart at Swansea.
The problem is that, Naughton didn't play last week, I don't think he's injured, so I don't know if there's possibly a little bit of concern there about
wife or partner had a baby.
Oh, is that right?
I think that's what I saw somewhere on the internet.
Yeah, I guess it looks like you're right. Yeah, he's got the light yellow right now. It says personal reasons, 75% chance of playing. So,
I'd take heart. He's going to come back a happy man. He's got a beautiful new baby. Mm-hmm. He's going to want to do one of those goal celebrations where he sucks his thumb or he puts the ball up under his shirt.
Yeah, that's true. All right, so Naughton might be your guy. He might be a slightly better option there. Williams. He's got Williams by 1 point, so it's kind of a toss up there. Yeah. I mean the stats don't lead you to take one. I actually think the stats slightly favor Ashley Williams.
Yeah, tell us about Spurs, Josh, because a lot of people jumped on the Dyer bandwagon, and now he's out for a game on 5 yellow cards.
Yeah, I know it's a. There are a couple different players to keep an eye on in Spurs. So Dyer is the one to – well, you know, if you're waiting 1 week, then Dyer might be the one. He's playing out of position. He's up to 5.2, though, which seems a little high. And I wonder if –
he's a great scorer of goals, though.
Yeah, that's true. Although it's kind of a fluky goal, the one he scored against Man City.
That's true.
I think Toby Alderweireld – and that's just a terrible name to have to say out loud.
It's a terrible name in general. Sorry, Toby, but
he's
no good.
Yeah, he's a little bit cheaper. His stats actually look a little bit better than Dyer's. Dyer does have him 2 goals to 1.
But what like his touches inside the box, his attacking potential? Because he gets up for corners and whatnot.
Yeah, he does, and he's up there with successful passes. He's one of the leaders. And he's up there in clearances too. So
three shots on target.
Yeah, shots on target.
So like he's just shooting the ball at Matt Target on Southampton. It's just total asshole.
Yeah, it's a weird. I shouldn't have pulled that stat because it's very.
I mean, if you look at this, there are at least 50% of these defenders have taken shots at Matt Target.
And he's not even going to be starting anymore, so it's not that relevant.
So you're looking to bring in – you said you were heavily considering bringing in a Southampton defender over the break.
I am. And so the question is which Southampton defender is the one that you'd want. And so the two that I'm looking at right now are – I'm still a little concerned about Cedric just because it doesn't seem – I mean like he's been subbed up at halftime a couple of times. He didn't start 1 week. You know, I actually think that Ryan Bertrand might be the player to look at. He's down to 5.3 because he was injured the first several weeks. I know, you know, guaranteed to start every week. Mm-hmm. Just push Target right off the starting pile there.
Yeah.
And so this, you know, it's hard to look, you know, the stats from this year don't give you a very representative picture of how well he played last year.
Very well.
Yeah. He and Nathaniel Klein were just, you know, bossing it on the wings for Southampton last year. 5.3 is also a bit of a difference.
That was the greatest double up in history, Bertrand and Klein.
It really was. I had Forster and Klein for like 7 weeks in a row, from like game week 6 to 13 last year. It was glorious.
You're basically just printing money over there.
But I mean, you know, bringing in a Southampton defender does seem to make a lot of sense because I guess that Leicester team does score. So I don't know if that's a. It's not a perfect fixture, but certainly one they keep a clean sheet in.
Yeah.
Then home to Bournemouth, away to Sunderland, home to Stoke. I mean, those are all clean sheet possible.
I'm a Van Dijk fan. He already has a goal. And he's like in the Ashley Williams category of guy who just looks fucking cool.
Yeah. I think it's Van Dijk, though, not Van Dijk.
Van Dijk. Okay, fair enough.
All right, whatever. Doesn't matter.
You say Dijk, I say Dick.
So his stats, they're not super representative because
he came in late in the transfer window.
Yeah, he's only played 4 games so far. He came in week 5, and he already has a goal and 3 bonus points. And 5.5 is fairly reasonable.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree. I would swap Nathaniel Klein for Van Dijk in a heartbeat.
You wouldn't think
in
about
a Southampton minute.
But you think Van Dijk over Bertrand is where you'd go?
I think that might be where you and I differ.
All right.
Yeah. We'll see. This will be our new Shelby versus AU contest.
Yeah, exactly. I think I'm going to win that one.
Yeah, well, you know, I got a Shelby assist over the weekend. Thank you, Harry Kane.
Mm-hmm. All right, so that is, I don't really, you know, I feel like we could tinker with this grid for whatever, but forever.
We could, there's so much information here. But so let us know how we did with that analysis. Hopefully that was helpful. Hit us up on Twitter at Hail Cheaters if you have anything to add to the discussion.
Yeah, that was our first run through. I think we can, we'll tighten that up as we go.
When we come back and revisit this massive defender spreadsheet.
If we do one for midfielders and forwards.
So there we are, our defender analysis. We're going to come back next week. We're going to preview game week 9 and update everyone on what happened over the international break, who tore their ACL, whose groin is causing them problems.
We're actually going to bring in that Chelsea doctor to give us an update on how everything's going.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, nice. How played over the week. She needs a job, and we're here to help. Eva Miniero, is that her name?
That's great. Well, I can't imagine she's busy with anything now.
Nope, just suing Chelsea. That's pretty much it.
Well, thanks for listening, guys. Enjoy the break. We'll see you next week. You can find us, of course, at alwayscheating.com and on Twitter at Hail Cheaters. And don't forget to join the Public League.
All right, Brandon. I will see you next week.
Yeah. Thanks, Josh. Bye.
Bye.